one out of five kids aged 5 to 17 speak a language other than English in their homes. That's according to 2016 data from National Kids Count. Multilingual school programs like dual immersion classes address the challenges of teaching students who speak little to no English and others whose first and only language is English. A handful of districts around Wisconsin offer dual immersion classes. The popularity of these kind of classes is rising so much among middle-class families that there's concern it may begin to push out English learners, part of the main target audience for these classes. Connor Williams is a senior researcher at New America's Education Policy Program, and he writes about education. His piece in The Atlantic is called The Intrusion of White Families into Bilingual Schools. Connor, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Let's start with the basics. So what is a dual immersion program? How does it work?
Right. So dual immersion programs are a model of education where kids are taught academic content in two languages. It's straightforward enough. They're immersed in both. And so critically, this allows them to learn each language through the subjects, not just as an isolated topic. Anybody who took a high school language course knows that if you go and you're studying verb tenses and just memorizing vocabulary, that's no way to learn a language. So these programs, they actually teach kids how to learn math in both languages, or science, or reading, literacy, all of the different subjects. And the real critical part of the article is that these programs have a lot of different forms, but the biggest fault line is between one-way programs on the one hand, and they serve usually exclusively native-speaking English speakers, and two-way programs on the other. And these are the two-way programs are the really impressive ones that serve integrated populations where the students are about evenly split between native speakers of English and native speakers of the other language in the program.
So make sure I have this right. Say this is a Spanish-English program. About roughly, ideally, half the kids are come from a Spanish-speaking family, are mainly Spanish speakers. The other half, mainly English speakers. They're all learning together in both languages.
That's right. So it's dual immersion because it's two languages of instruction, and it's two-way because you have two different language teams, language subgroups in the classroom. The reason that those are so important and that they work so well is actually a relatively simple math problem. That if you have a class full of English-speaking first graders, let's say, and you have one Spanish-speaking teacher, she's a native speaker, she's really strong in Spanish, there's still only one of her. And that means that when she's not the one doing the talking, it's likely that the class defaults back into English over and over and over in social interactions and all of the learning. When you have two different groups of students who sort of have different language default positions, that means that a lot of their social language interactions are going to start to happen in both English but also in the other language.
Now, before we had these dual immersion programs, or at least many of them, what was the standard? Was it the English as a second language where the kids who didn't start off with English are kind of taking their own separate classes?
There hasn't been any one standard in the United States over the years. For instance, it's one of the lost bits of history from the United States is that we have a long history of bilingual education that stretches back well over a century in a variety of different settings. In the North Midwest, I'm from Michigan. In the North Midwest, German populations, Dutch populations, Polish populations of immigrants ran their own school systems often that maintained their native languages even as students started learning English. But there have also been other moments in American history where these languages have been seen as a threat, and different regions in the country have swung away from multilingual education and towards English-only or English immersion instruction. Sometimes it has to do with foreign policy. The wars were fighting at the given moment, and that was a big deal with the ending of a lot of the German bilingual programs in the early 20th century. Sometimes it has to do with shifting politics and economics. California, as a state, went English-only in the late 1990s because there was a sense, this politics around so many Latino immigrants were perceived to be in the state, and there was this wave of trying to make them feel less welcome. So it really has varied a lot by region and by historical moment.
Talking to Connor Williams from New America's Education Policy Program, talking about a bilingual education program called Dual Immersion Education. He says a lot of time the demographics of people using it are changing. And Connor, you visited, before we get into the problems, you visited some functioning dual immersion programs. What did you see? What happens when it's working well?
Well, so I have the luxury of attending one every single day when I drop my children off here in Washington, D.C. I have two elementary school children who are in a really highly integrated two-way dual immersion program. It's nicely balanced between Spanish native-speaking students and English-speaking native-speaking students. So what you'll see, it really does come down to what I was hinting at before. If you're in one of these classrooms that's working well, you'll notice that the social interactions between students, especially across different language groups, will be in both the target language and in English. It's just a matter of, they call them, in the research world, it's called peer effects, that those peer effects of student-to-student interactions being conducted in my children's case in Spanish, that those tend to be really helpful at engaging all students across lines of difference, but also at developing both the languages in that classroom. I did go to some other programs as part of the research for the article, one in Delaware that was Academia Antonio Alonso, which was a really impressive integrated school out there. And I've seen, as part of my work at New America, we go to these schools regularly. The big challenge, frankly, nationwide on these two-way immersion programs isn't selling them at the elementary school level or proving that they work at that level, but finding out how to expand them into middle school and high school. And that's something that a lot of places still haven't figured out how to do.
And another problem is it sounds like these programs are in some ways victims of their own success. And this is a big part of what you write about. They're so popular that it's skewing the demographics of who gets spots in these classes.
That's right. It's very difficult to prove this. It's the kind of thing, so my work involves going around to schools all over the country to talk about how they serve English learners. And educators have been telling me this for 4 or 5 years now. They see this over and over again. They've got this new program. It was rolled out to try to serve a new group of immigrant or English language learner students in the district. And then to bring those students into the broader schooling system where they would be in classrooms with English-dominant kids too. And the demand from the English-dominant families, from privileged families, was pushing these kids out over time. I also look, as a white, relatively privileged English-dominant parent in Washington, D.C., I hear about this on the playground regularly. And in our city, these programs have hundreds to thousands of kids on the wait list for pre-K every single year in the public school system.
And because we base where kids go to school very often on where they live, a changing neighborhood can have the same effect, right? Push this program's popular, people can afford to move there to take advantage of it, and then what happens?
That's right. And so in D.C., we have a couple of instances of this where there are neighborhoods that have gentrified out, and that's pushed a great many traditionally underserved students and their families out of these neighborhoods, many of whom are English language learners. So as a neighborhood gets whiter and wealthier and more English dominant, then the school does too. We have some open enrollment lottery schools here, and this is the same in Los Angeles, in various other communities around the country too, where they have the neighborhood problem. They also have some of these open enrollment lottery schools where no matter where you live in the district, you can still go if you're given a seat in the random lottery. The problem is that gentrification patterns are such in some of these communities, D.C. for sure, and also in other places, where folks, English language learner families, are being gentrified out of the entire community. They're not in the district, so they're not even eligible to be in the lottery anymore. And then most critically, and this is actually, it doesn't come as much in the article, but it is happening, is that because they're popular in places where they exist, they're being expanded. And the expansions that are happening in ways that are that tended to be one-way immersion programs for English-speaking kids. And this is in Utah, this is in Delaware, New York City. A lot of the different efforts to expand dual immersion education aren't actually, they're just from the beginning being targeted at English-speaking families.
So I want to talk about who loses out here. Obviously, you were talking about English language learners, who this is in large part devised for, are getting placed out of these schools. How about lower income families with the English speaking families who might want this opportunity?
Absolutely. In fact, this is one of the major challenges. We have this problem right now that the rhetoric around this is very complicated. For instance, it is true that it would be great. It would be better than our current situation. It would be, in fact, optimal if every kid who went through U.S.'s public schools came out multilingual. That would be a great goal to shoot for. It's a goal we should be shooting for. It is also the case that a vanishingly small percentage of American teachers are prepared to actually teach in these programs. We have a very small percentage of our teachers who are actually functionally, seriously, proficiently multilingual. So that means that every time we open one of these and we skew the student body towards the privileged, in the zero-sum game, that means that underserved, underprivileged students are often not getting access. And so then you have this, that sort of first-order problem. The second-order problem is, we really do need English-speaking kids in these programs. It's good for the English language learners, in many cases, the native Spanish-speaking students. It's really good for them to be around native English-speaking students. The trouble is that as that number creeps up to 60, 70, 80, 90% of the kids in a particular program are English-dominant kids, then the program is not going to work as well to produce multilingualism in the long run. And it's going to mean that a lot of English language learners aren't getting access. The problem then, finally, is to your point, if you have then about half of each of these programs should be designated for English-dominant kids, that means that English-dominant kids from low-income families are almost inevitably always going to lose out. So the moment that we start catering these programs to the privileged, it's going to underserve English language learners for sure, and it's probably also going to start underserving English-dominant families who are from low-income backgrounds as well.
Connor Williams is with us, senior researcher at New America's Education Policy Program. We're talking about bilingual schools and dual immersion programs. He writes that the popularity of these programs may be driving out the kids they're supposed to help. You can join in at 800-642-1234. We have some of these schools around Wisconsin. Do you have experience with one of them? As a parent, a student, a teacher there, would you like to send your kid to a school like this if it were available in your area? Would you have gone to a school like this as a kid yourself? Should it be a goal for students to come out of school multilingual? Share your thoughts at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation with Connor Williams, senior researcher at New America's Education Policy Program. We're looking at the growing popularity of dual immersion programs in schools where classes are run in two languages, most commonly English and Spanish, but not just that. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have experience with this kind of dual immersion program? We have some of them around Wisconsin. Have you taught in one of them? Have you sent your kid to one of those? Do you wish you had something like this in your area where kids learn in two different languages, ideally a mix of kids from the backgrounds of both languages? You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. And Connor, you're talking about a shortage of teachers who can teach successfully, thoroughly in two different languages, English and Spanish or whatever the other language is. Is there an effort to get more teachers trained to be able to do that?
Not at a national level, no. The numbers, as I've lately seen them, is that we have, as you said, approaching 25%. It's between 1 in 5 and 1 in 4 of our K-12 students are speaking a non-English language at home. The numbers for teachers are about half that, so it's around 1 in 9, 1 in 10. And then of that one, right, the 10% or so of teachers who speak a non-English language at home, you can imagine about a half of those are teaching French in high schools or German, or, you know, they're not eligible or available to be starting in these dual immersion classrooms. And that means we just really don't have a teaching force that speaks the languages at the same rates and at the same levels as our students. There are some regional efforts and some local efforts. Our team has been doing some work on that here in New America about different ways to try to train up multilingual paraprofessionals and teachers' aides to become fully licensed teachers, different ways to adjust our teacher licensure process so that they're friendlier to non-native English speakers. There's always the sort of possibility of changing our visa rules for visiting international teachers, although that's a pretty fraught move these days. financial incentives to get bilingual adults to consider teaching. All these things are out there in the world, but there's nothing that's a big comprehensive effort.
This is resource intensive, but any thought of team teaching, one teacher who's really good at English and has some Spanish and vice versa?
Yeah, that's one of the ways that, frankly, these programs have started to develop that way now, where you can double your double the effect of each Spanish-speaking or Mandarin-speaking or French-speaking teacher by having them teach half the day of one class and half the day of another. They essentially get to, instead of serving 20 or 30 first graders, now they can serve 40 to 60 by serving two different classrooms by sort of switching kids. You do see that sometime, for sure.
I want to bring on a caller now. We have Kathy with us in the Waukesha area. Kathy, hi.
Hello.
What do you want to tell us about, Kathy?
Hello. Well, I began teaching many years ago in a one-way program. It pretty much served students that did not speak English, and then the school district added dual two-way in about 8 years ago, and it is a fabulous program. And as our numbers grow with both group levels, they tend to open up more programs and more schools, and it's a very successful program.
And Kathy,
if you look at the research.
Go ahead.
I'm a reading teacher, and have been doing both languages for many years.
And Kathy, is your district able to find teachers as they open up more programs, make them available for more kids?
Fortunately, yes.
All right. Thanks a lot, Kathy, for sharing that experience. So she sees it as a success, and knock on wood, so far, Waukesha is finding the teachers they need, Connor.
That's great. It's very encouraging to hear. I know Madison runs a number of these programs as well. I've not been to see them, but I have heard of a number of them, including Nuestro Mundo.
Thanks a lot for that call. Kathy at 800-642-1234. We'll go next to Jacob on the line in Eau Claire. Jacob, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What did you want to tell us about, Jacob?
When I was younger, it must have been first grade, kindergarten or so, there was a brother and a sister. They were twins, and they were both deaf. And so the school had a translator there, and we had classes just so that way we could communicate with them every day. And so I learned sign language at a young age in school, and then I've been able to teach my own kids that now that I've gotten older and have kids of my own.
Well, that's interesting. And they taught the subject matter, at least in part, in sign language.
Yes, they did everything in sign language with a translator right up there next to the teacher. And then they had classes for us so that way we could learn sign language, so that way the brother and the sister wouldn't feel like they were left out.
Jacob, thank you so much for sharing that story. And Connor, Jacob, it sounds like, still works with sign language, was teaching it to his own kids. Is that part of the point of immersion? Because I've taken a lot of foreign language classes in my life. I speak virtually none of those languages now. The immersion at an early age really does seem to stick with people.
Yeah, we've got pretty good research on this now. That I'm the same as you. I started taking Spanish classes in middle school, and I basically followed the existing English-dominant multilingual pathway in the United States. Which is to say, you start then, and you take courses forever. You major in it in college and study abroad, and somewhere in there around study abroad, you kind of lock it in for good. But it took 12 years. You know, it took basically the whole of my academic career, starting in middle school and going on. The idea with immersion, especially in the elementary years, is you can get at kids when technical term is their brain plasticity, which is to say that their brains are more flexible. They still have more room to accommodate a second language, and they can build it into how their brains are actually wired. The really exciting and somewhat cutting-edge research on this starts to suggest that because it actually wires kids' brains differently as they're growing up, there's some research to suggest that it makes them smarter and more powerful thinkers in a host of ways that don't have any obvious connection to language. They pay better attention. They're able to really drill deep into a particular task. They can intentionally manage their attention in ways that other monolingual kids aren't as able to do. So, yeah, it's beyond exciting for the parents who get into these programs. The trouble, of course, is making sure that we allocate those slots equitably.
Jacob, thanks for the call. Go next to Gene in Kaukauna. Gene, hi.
Hi. I have two little granddaughters in the Milwaukee school system. They're in a bilingual school. And it is a great idea starting out young, but I think there's a added thing that people don't realize is when they learn it in those schools and they have mixed people, the racial issues are really addressed too. And it gets us, I mean, my granders, they don't notice that. They know difference in color, like a little girl had a different dress on.
Huh. Gene, thanks for the call. Connor, we're starting to run out of time, but is that, being able to work with people from different backgrounds part of the goal here?
Absolutely. This is something you hear a lot about in these programs. They're about building global citizens who are tolerant, who are comfortable with different cultures and different languages. And done well, you can set policies that'll do this. Linguistic integration can actually support racial and ethnic integration as well.
And briefly, Connor, competitiveness. It's a world where we're talking to people who speak a lot of languages.
No question. In the future, for instance, in Utah, where they've been building out more of these dual immersion programs, a lot of them are one way for English speakers. But it is still the case that the conservative lawmaker in the state Senate who put it together was compelled to do it because he was going to China and finding that their degree of multilingualism, the number of Chinese students who knew English was just off the charts compared to the United States, number of students who knew Mandarin.
We'll leave it there for now. Connor, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Hey, thank you for having me.
We've been talking to Connor Williams. He's a senior researcher at New America's Education Policy Program. He writes about education. He joined us to talk about his piece for The Atlantic. It's called The Intrusion of White Families into Bilingual Schools. Still time for you to share your thoughts and your experiences if you've experienced bilingual education one way or another, or if you learned English in a school as a non-English speaker when you came in. Love to hear about your experiences too. You can tell your story. You can email ideas at WPR.org, or you can post over at the Ideas Network Facebook page. I'd love to hear what you have to say.